Check podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Jason Goldsworthy and I'm the Executive Director of COAST, the Centre for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. We are Pacific Canada's hub for the blue economy and we support our members to research, start up and scale sustainable ocean innovation. On today's episode, we're chatting with Seaspan, a maritime leader with over 130 years of experience in Canada's west coast. I'm very privileged to welcome Jennifer Buzzler, the Innovation Manager at Seaspan, for our discussions today. Thank you, Jennifer, for your time. I know you're incredibly busy, so I appreciate this opportunity.
Happy to be here.
So, Jennifer, first of all, I mean, most people on the West Coast are very familiar with Seaspan. You know, from Vancouver, you can see it across the harbour and in Esquimalt Graving Dock, big facilities. But a lot of people may not exactly know what Seaspan offers and services. And for those that are listening from further outside of BC, perhaps you can just start by giving a bit of an indication on or an example of what Seaspan does and the services they provide.
So Seaspan has two major parts to it here in BC. The first is we have our three shipyards located, as you said. Two of them are in North Vancouver. That's our Vancouver shipyard, which does all of our new builds. Our Vancouver dry dock, which is a commercial repair facility. And then over on the island, we have the Victoria shipyards, which also does repairs as well as ship modernization activities. We also have, as you've seen, as you said, we also have our Seaspan Marine Group, which includes services like transportation services and ferries, tugs and barges, and also our partnership with High Sea. We also have Seaspan Energies, which looks at like marine petrol bulk and LNG bunkering and various pier and jetty facilities. So we're quite diverse here on the West Coast with lots of activities happening in both the Lower Mainland as well as on the island.
And it sort of touches a whole heap of different components of the maritime sector, as you mentioned, very diverse. Can you maybe explain to me a little bit more about your role as innovation manager and also a little bit of history for yourself and how you ended up in this role? Because it's a pretty cool role, if I may say so myself.
Yes. So as the innovation manager, I work predominantly with the three shipyards. I have the privilege of working across the organization to develop, evaluate, and adopt emerging technologies that we're going to have an impact on how we're doing business today, but more importantly, how we'll be doing business in the future. And a lot of that changes with the technology that's emerging. A lot of that's changing with the ongoing transformation in the industry itself. I am actually an import into the marine industry. I've spent about 20 years in research and development in the aerospace industry before coming and joining Seaspan in 2021. So my career has always been focused on those multidisciplinary places. So I love the marine industry because it has all of these different pieces working together. And in that intersection between the really interesting new ideas that are coming into industry and how do we adopt them and really make them work, right? So that whole innovation adoption strategies and innovation adoption pathways is what's really kind of been key to a lot of what I've been doing in my career over the last 25 years.
It's incredible to go from the aerospace to the maritime. I'm sure there's lots of lots of intersections there, but not something that would come directly off the top of mind. But and maybe keeping on that tack, I mean, innovation. It's one of the keys. I mean, I'm a captured audience and, you know, pushing innovation through COAST, but it's great that Seaspan has invested into a team of an innovation team. And maybe can you explain a little bit how big the team is and, you know, what they sort of do?
Sure. So innovation itself at Seaspan, we've been through the National Shipbuilding Strategy. We've had to come up with new ways in which we do what we do now compared to how we've done that in the past. Shipyards, as well as our partners at Seaspan Marine, to really rethink how we operate and build vessels. So that's happening all on its own. I joined the organization specifically because they realized that to really understand those emerging technologies, not the ones that are currently commercially available or that are just coming into the market, we really need to sort of, if you want to say, cleave off and focus specifically on that. So I joined in 2021, and there was two other people working in specifically just looking at those emerging technologies innovation. And I've grown the team to about 15. It's about 9 people full time. And then the remainder are, we have a couple PhD candidates, we have a master's candidate, we have some interns coming in from our from the co-op programs and things like that. So innovation tends to be a little bit of a melting pot. We tend to work on smaller short-term activities around evaluating and de-risking technology, trying to understand, what does this do? How does it do it? What does that mean for us? Where does it fit within our current processes, or where we want to be able to take those processes? So it's quite a mixture. I have software developers, I have architect, you know, naval architects, I have a marine engineer, I have some CAD specialists. So it's kind of a nice, interesting mixture of disciplines that need to kind of come together in order to sort of see and understand where these technologies lie, and then how do they interface back into the deep expertise and the deep activities that are happening elsewhere within the organization.
I think it's exciting. I mean, you explained the growth of that over 3 or 4 years, yeah, and the fact that, yeah, it's wonderful that Seaspan's investing this, and it's a great example. You talked about the different sort of disciplines that you have in your innovation team. Can you maybe share with the listeners sort of where you see the key innovations taking forth in the future for that might impact vessels and shipbuilding, and what you're seeing coming through that's really making a change, and where you think that might go?
So one of the most hardest and difficult tasks that I had when I first joined was we had to select what was the innovation team going to focus on. And now, naturally, this is going to evolve over time, but we managed to sort of settle on 4 areas that we're largely doing our innovation investigation. So the first one was on digital twinning, digital thread, Internet of Things, so sensors and sensing and computer vision, some in digitalization, although there's a whole other activity around digitalization within the organization. So we're sort of more downstream from the digitalization piece. So that's one of those activities. The other would be looking at green technologies. This is just an active area that's constantly evolving. It will be for the next, 10 to 50 years. A lot of change happening in green technology. So we're largely around monitoring and understanding where that's going, understanding where those trends are, what's coming down the pike, where are those capabilities potentially going to come into future builds, how do we potentially participate and support existing conversions, that sort of thing. Also, we're looking at autonomy is a big game changer that's happening within the marine ecosystem. It's happening in other ones as well. And that is an offshoot to that digitalization piece. The more we use digital information and we use data for making decisions, the more we can automate some of those activities. But it's also around managing the complexity of these vessels. How do you do the same amount, if not more, with fewer crew members or fewer workers? So it's a little bit about managing workers as well as making sure that it can be done safely, right? So how do we potentially increase the safety of our human workers, of our human crew? And then also, how do we make sure that there's good well-being between those two pieces as they work together, as we're bringing in some of those autonomous pieces that are there to assist crew and workers in what they're doing on a day-to-day basis? And then the fourth one that we looked at was largely around manufacturing. So there's a lot happening in material science, whether we're talking about additive manufacturing or 3D printing, new methodologies that we need to bring online. We're working with whole new grades of steel. What does that mean for our welding processes? What are some of those procedures that need to come in place? Again, how does all of those potentially intersect with one another? How does, you know, having a better digital twin or a digitization capability feed into autonomy and then help with, you know, automating some of our manufacturing processes in order to improve safety? So there's just lots of places where those all kind of tend to poke up on a regular basis. So if I had to pick four, those would be the four that we're kind of focusing on for now. Range of things.
It is. And we've only got a short period today to go through this. So I do want to touch on a couple of those areas because, like you mentioned, like digital twins and data collection and finding data to make decisions on future operations or current operations is a big thing. And maybe if you can delve a little bit more into the digital twin technology or that data digital ship type idea, perhaps you can give a bit of an indication where C-SPAN's at with that in terms of, you know, implementing some of those digital twin technologies.
Yeah. So the first thing you need to do whenever you talk about digital twins is first pause for a moment and go, so what do you mean by a digital twin? You can put five people in a room and ask them what is a digital twin and get anywhere between 7 and 15 answers as to what a digital twin is. So let's first start with a bit of definition. So for me, a digital twin in its loosest form is a digital representation of a physical asset or a system. When we talk about it in what we're doing within C-SPAN Innovation, we're largely looking at how are we taking time series and spatial information, combining those with analytics in order to provide a simulation or insights of that data into a representational interface for the user, whether that's a dashboard or a virtual reality experience or an augmented reality solution. So for me, a digital twin is not simply, you know, a set of data. You can take a 3D CAD model, right? And you can even add extra information and it becomes a very rich digital asset. But until it actually does something and provides you with insight or allows you to explore it in a new way, then it's not really a digital twin. So once we've established that a digital twin is, you know, a set of data in addition with, you know, something analytics or otherwise that are giving you insights and then providing, you know, a unique representation of it without having to look at each of them, then we can kind of talk about digital twinning. So what are we doing in digital twinning? We're largely looking at that interface between 3D models and physics-based systems, right? So physics-based modeling has been used in shipbuilding for a very long time, doing computer simulations, fluid dynamics, that sort of thing. Largely, they're used in a very focused way in order to establish an expected performance under a certain set of conditions, right? In order to make sure that the vessel that you're building is going to meet certain requirements. But when we start talking about digital twinning, we're starting about expanding it out and being able to, you want to say, query that model under a variety of different conditions, not just those individual specific ones. So we're looking quite a bit at where physics-based models intersect with 3D digital models. We're looking at maintenance records and how do you use the ongoing recording that is now available on many modern vessels of performance metrics of individual systems or individual pieces of equipment? And how does that tie into maintenance and expected performance over time for those pieces of equipment? How does the intersection between multiple systems also potentially evolve over time and tell you about what is the current condition and performance expectations and how does that fit into the maintenance plans for those vessels? So vessels tend to go out into operation and then they have the long series over which you're maintaining that life, that vessel or that asset over time. So you're quite interested in making sure that you're keeping all of those pieces of equipment up to date, both with the class society rules, but also in the actual expected performance from that vessel so that you can provide a safe working environment for the crew. So maintenance records become really interesting. So we're quite focused on our digital twinning on how do those pieces of information string together and allow give us more and better insights into how the vessels will perform over time. We're also looking at visualization systems, right? Yep. So that's kind of the fancy final end of it, where you're looking at how do you use augmented reality or mixed reality headsets or virtual reality headsets in order to explore those insights and those 3D spaces in ways that had previously not really been accessible or used regularly by our shipbuilding teams.
So on that, and coming back to a layman person's terms, and I loved your, by the way, I'm going to steal your digital representation of a physical thing, or I think it's a best description or concise description of a digital twin I've heard. But is it, for these digital twins and for those people who aren't familiar with them, is it a good opportunity to for training and development? You talked about before that the digital twin sort of works across multiple areas, and also seeing what ship performance might be, not in the real world, but in a world that we can predict, that it's not as expensive if something goes wrong.
Yes. So there's a couple of reasons why we undertook it, and you hit on pretty much all of them. One was the vessel itself spends anywhere from 5 years to 20 years as a digital model and a bunch of documentation, right? So we want to be able to use digital twins so that you can now query and understand what that vessel will be like long before we cut steel. And then even once we've cut steel and we're in the actual fabrication production of that vessel, you often want to go back and potentially explore confined spaces before you build them, explore how different pipe spools are going to meet up with one another long before it's actually in the real world, because it's so much easier to change things in a digital world and inquire on things in a digital world than waiting for it to be a physical asset. So there's a lot of both cost and time savings, but cost and wastage savings and cost in material savings by being able to work more in a digital environment. So that's a large part of that motivation for a shipbuilder. But then that transfers also into the owner operator of that vessel, where they now have a very, very rich digital asset stack of information, right, that they can potentially bring in that will then help inform their logistics for maintenance and inform their life cycle planning and inform how they can potentially use some of these additional pieces of information that are being collected during operation in combination with what the shipbuilder put together. So you end up with what's now called a digital thread, right, where you have this digital information that starts at the shipbuilder, and then how does that transfer into the life cycle management of that asset as it goes forward? So both of those are equally important, but you can't start it in the end, right? If you need it at the life cycle management stage, you have to first create it at the shipbuilder stage.
So it's important that it's, as you mentioned, happens right at the start. And yes. And it then transfers right through. So it's a big investment. I think, you know, shipbuilding is not like something that happens overnight. You know, these are large, long projects. What's kind of the time frame from a ship inception to maybe rolling out? So is it, 3, 4, 5 years? Obviously, it depends on the size of the ship. But in terms of a new vessel, and I know there's new vessels that C-SPAN's working on at the moment, we're talking years, aren't we?
Yes, we're talking years. So most of the vessels will spend, the vessels of the large 1,000-ton up class that we're building at Vancouver Shipyards, those have largely spent 5 to 10 years, some 20, depending on when you want to start to count, as a design phase, really working out what are the requirements, what the expected mission of those vessels are, how are we going to build them using current technology, where are some of the trade-offs that need to be made. Even once you have a preliminary design, it would then go through a detailed design and a functional design and then a production design. So it can spend a long time as a digital asset before it actually becomes a physical one. And then depending on the vessel itself, it can take anywhere from probably in most of our cases, from about 4 years to 7 years to build a vessel.
And in that time, obviously through your group, the innovation's changing. There's new technology coming on. So I'm going to use that as a segue into one of the other areas you talked about, was green technology. Obviously a big concern in the world, you know, how do we become more sustainable, cleaner energy, all of that. What sort of technology is C-SPAN looking at in incorporating into some of their vessels that go down this path? And what do you see as, you know, the future opportunities there?
So we're all in that particular position where we're looking towards those climate action targets and trying to move in those directions. many of the vessels that we're currently building were defined over 10 years ago, many of those requirements. So we're sticking with fairly conventional fuels that are going into the new vessels that we're building. But nevertheless, as part of the assessments of building those vessels, we have been looking and working with our customers, the Canadian Coast Guard, in understanding, well, what are the options for midlife upgrades or refits as the vessel goes into service, and how does that potentially change over time? I think everyone is interested in looking at how do we adapt? And there's likely to be many phases of adapting that are in front of us as we move from our near-term solutions using drop-in fuels like biodiesel and renewable diesel, in some cases being able to do conversions to LNG. So we have experience doing that, both at our Victoria shipyards as well as with our ferries team. So we're looking at what are some of those near-term interim solutions, while at the same time keeping that pressure on and attention towards what are some of those emerging fuel types, or how accessible is shore power to be able to do electrification? Where does electrification make sense? So when we think about our partners at C-SPAN Marine Transportation, they're looking at some of those solutions as well. And does it make sense to use some electric propulsion in certain circumstances, and where does that make sense? Should they be converting over to LNG, which they've done with a few of their vessels as well? So there's a lot of options kind of on the table. And if that's one of the things of having an innovation team, is allows us to kind of, if you want to say, trend watch, right? And then help bring the latest information to the table when those conversations are happening. But ultimately, it comes down, as a shipbuilder, it comes down to the customer and what the customer has put into their requirements. And then we build the vessel that's there. And then we help them through lifecycle management in terms of whatever changes potentially come down the route when those technologies are more mature and more accessible and are available to be able to be put onto just new vessels.
And presumably, going back to the digital twinning, some of the information you're gathering from there can also work towards performance improvements or better ways to run the ship as well, that can work on energy savings and stuff. Is that fair to say?
Yes. No, that's so in terms of the interim and like here and now solutions, a lot of it is around how do we use the energy the current carbon-based energy that we have, and how do we use it more efficiently? How do we potentially bring in hybridization for peak shaving and things like that that we're seeing that started in the automotive market, and now we're seeing them transfer into the vessel markets. So there's a lot of different, if you want to say, interim approaches that how do we potentially use the carbon-based solution that we have right now? How do we improve reducing the amount of and the greenhouse gases, being more efficient with those fuels as we go forward? How do we design vessels so that they have more of that efficiency? That's that digital twinning piece. So there's a lot of interplay between the vessel itself, the equipment that's on the vessel, the operating parameters or the duty cycles, and the mission that it's operating in, and the types of water. And that all of those really need to be considered when you think about how you're going to transition that capability into a new energy market.
And you mentioned, so a couple of things, and just as I'm listening, is you talked about the automotive market has, you know, worked through this, and you're looking at similar ideas. You've come from the aerospace industry. Is there a lot of crossover between those areas? Is there back and forth, you know, the maritime industry comes up with this innovation and hands it off to there and vice versa? Or is it still, is every group sort of kind of working a little bit siloed in that area?
They work separately, but there are overlapping places. Frankly, the automotive industry has its own challenges, and they are substantially larger in both the impact and the volume of GHGs that are emitted. So they have a completely different strategy on how they're going to need to do their transition plan as opposed to the marine industry. But there are, if you want to say, I would say more approaches that are similar between the two, coming up with good interim solutions, better fuel efficiency, which again is we said, in the automotive industry, we've been hearing about how to make the vehicles more fuel efficient for 20, 30 years. And now we're thinking about how we're going to make move into electrification and when and where does that make sense. So those same conversations and that same approach you're finding across different industries. Coming from the aerospace industry, it's very similar. They're also looking at what are their options in those spaces. And often there's a lot around carbon monitoring and carbon credits, and how do those potentially play into the operating capabilities that are coming in? How do you actually meet those more holistically rather than individual vessel to vessel to vessel? So that, again, there's a lot of crossover and a lot of related technologies, but there's also going to be a lot of competition for limited resources as we're entering into this interim phase. There's only so much biodiesel to go around. So should it go to terrestrial markets or should that go to marine markets? There's only so much renewable diesel to go around. There's only so much arable land in which to create, you know, ethanol. Mm. So there's all of these sort of, if you want to say, complex that are going to come in, not in addition to your local need factors and your local availability factors in terms of infrastructure and access to these new fuels or alternative fuels. So it's a very complex picture. And there isn't a single, we'll all just transition to this fuel in the marine industry and the terrestrial industry will transition to that fuel and it'll all work out. It's going to be a mixture in between. And so it'll be both.
Yeah, and just from my limited experience, I mean, there's all these different challenges too. What's the challenge in the marine industry isn't necessarily in the terrestrial industry and vice versa. So you can't just apply the same concept across, but, you know, it's good to hear that there's some common threads and concepts that are being shared around. I'm going to change track a little bit here and talk about Seaspan. It's a fantastic organization, large shipbuilding operation here, which we're very proud of to be on the West Coast. Can you talk about, and it's a little bit outside the innovation, but you talked a little bit about it as well in terms of innovation works with workforce development, but can you talk a little bit about where Seaspan is with workforce development, working with the community, how does it engage at a whole level, but also more in an innovation? How can we look at supporting new companies coming up with new innovation with Seaspan?
So there's two parts to that. There's the workforce development piece, and then there's, if you want to say, the supply chain development piece.
Yep.
Right. So on the workforce development place, I mean, we've grown considerably over the last 12 years since the National Shipbuilding Strategy came in place. We now have over 3,800 employees across our three shipyards. So there's a lot of, if you want to say, ongoing training within Seaspan itself. Mm-hmm. We have very active workforce development. We work very closely with our local schools as well. So we have agreements with Seaspan and BCIT, as well as Camosun, with the University of British Columbia. We've done some work with the University of Victoria. Again, those fall into two pieces. There's how do we create a sustainable workforce for our marine industry in the here and now. And then there's also that innovation piece around how do we, you know, attract and utilize emerging solutions and emerging capabilities as we modernize shipbuilding itself and modernize the marine industry. If we're going into digital transformation and digital twinning, it's not just about mechanical engineering and welding anymore. It's also about software development and cloud computing and who understands how to maintain the Azure database. So there's a lot of things where we're needing to branch out within the marine industry and really draw upon other strong capabilities in BC, in our information technologies, as well as in our, you know, emerging fuel markets. So there's lots of places in which it's kind of all coming together in both of those aspects. Mm-hmm. The how do we grow as an industry and create a sustained job market for people that live here in the Lower Mainland and on Vancouver Island? And then how do we adapt to all of these new emerging capabilities that we want in digital or in future fuels or in autonomy? And how do we bring in those at that level of expertise into the marine industry as well? And so that is also part of supplier development. So one of the challenges as a prime contractor. We're largely a system integrator, which means we, you know, build the vessel, but we have a large supply chain. So we have over 700 participants in our vendor list, in our supply chain, all across Canada, but about 70% of that is based here in BC. Right? And so often we're working with them. They're the ones that are really supplying all of that knowledge, equipment, and expertise into us as a shipbuilder to bring that together and actually build the vessel itself. So there's a lot in there as well of how do we, you know, transfer our understanding of where future fuels and digitization and autonomy are going, and how do we work with our supply chain in order to build up that capacity so that even if it's not in the vessel we're building today, it might be in the vessel that's coming in 10 years. And is our supply chain also knowledgeable and adapting and building up expertise in those spaces? So a lot of that kind of comes into play that as a prime contractor, you know, we get a slightly different picture, but when we need to really work across both incoming future workers, but also incoming and upcoming supply chain providers that are really going to provide those solutions into those future builds.
It seems to me there's a huge amount of opportunity there from, as you said, from the workforce to the supply chain to work and collaborate. We're growing through these different operations. We're starting to run out of time. I just got one last question because I knew we were going to have way too many questions here to get through in the half hour. And you've touched on a little bit through it, but I just want to maybe summarize it up. So as Seaspan continues to expand and, you know, you've got a great forward order book with some vessels on the go, but there's all this transition to digital technology. What do you think are going to be the key challenges that you're going to have to overcome and the industry has to overcome to really keep that growth going, not only here in BC, but, you know, more globally as well?
I think we really need to shift towards accepting that more data needs to be collected and more data needs to be used as part of our analytics. That whole digitalization spend, we're just really getting started in the marine industry. The vehicular industry is long ahead of us on that. The aerospace industry is long ahead of us on that. So I think in terms of that digitalization and digital twinning, IoT, the sensors, and then the trust, building the trust into those systems is going to be very important for the marine industry in general. And that is going to require skill sets that have not been traditionally part of the marine industry. And so we're going to need to be adaptive and open to what that means. We also need to be adaptive and open to the changing, if you want to say, energy options that are going to be emerging over the next 10 to 20 years. And what does that mean for our industry? How do we work with our partner industries that are also potentially putting resource demands on electricity or fuel? And how do we bridge between those two and then be open to those technologies and open to the risk that technology potentially brings to the table? How are we going to manage through a very exciting time of transformation and change? As an innovator, I can't imagine being anywhere else. It sounds really exciting, but, you know, potentially as a, you know, a capital investor, it may seem a little bit more risky. So there is going to need to be this sort of acceptance that we are going into transition, both on energy, we're going into transition on digitalization. And how are we going to adapt to those collectively? And then how are we going to manage that risk collectively? So there's just some really interesting things to do over the next couple of decades. A lot of change happening in our industry as we kind of reinvent it here on the West Coast. We stabilize it and we bring in all sorts of new ideas as to how we deliver shipbuilding and ship operations into the future.
I got hairs on the back of my neck standing up. I mean, as you mentioned, I couldn't think of anything to be part of more. So I think it's really exciting. I've loved the discussions we've had in the past year or so, and really support with where Seaspan's going with their innovation market. I want to thank you for your time, Jennifer. I know you're very busy, but appreciate that you're always able to give up some time. And thank you for having the chat today.
Absolutely delighted to be here. Thanks for having the chat with me. I'm happy to talk to you some more about what we're doing over here at Seaspan.
Beautiful. Thanks, Jennifer. And thanks to our listeners for joining us over Coast Talks. If you'd like to learn more about our work, visit our website at canadacoast.ca or follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Bye for now.